ahead of week 11 fantasy football. All the information is rolling in: games, changing locations, players on the field. As always, Hayden Winks is here to join me, and a special guest, a man who has no idea what's on primetime television because during those hours, he is streaming on YouTube every single night over on the Fantasy Flock channels. It's Mason Dodd. Mason, welcome to the channel.
Thank you for having me. I mean, figured y'all get Josh McCown on here about time. You get someone with some credibility. So I figured we would make a stop by.
Now, my only goal is to find every single person, real life, online, whatever, with a much better head of hair than I do, and then just bring them on. So I just look like, you know, I'm even older than I am in my early to mid 30s. That's it.
Right. I promise you, my friend, this is going to be here for another 12 months. It is thinning quickly.
Stop.
It is
no, you're not even close. Fast. No, you're, I'm not. Trust joking. Me, you're not even close. All right. As you know, this is when we go through some of our favorite plays. They don't have to be massive names. They can be some of our favorites in the wide receiver threes or the flex spots, just to give you a sense of the matchups that we have a keen eye on. And Mason, since you are the guest, let's kick it off. A little fire to the table. Cortland Sutton facing the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how many people watching this will watch our YouTube channel, but I built an entire brand this offseason saying Cortland Sutton, the most overrated player fantasy football, not even remotely close. Going back and looking at the historical splits that you've had with and without Jerry Jeudy on the field, night and day difference when it comes to the usage that you're getting from Cortland Sutton. Or if you're going back to 2020, 2021, even throughout this season, Cortland Sutton literally averaging 4.7 targets per game in games that Jerry Jeudy plays. That gets bumped up to 9 targets per game. Of course, we're operating with the smaller sample. I'm looking at a sample size of 7 games in those 2 years without Jerry Jeudy. But if you go back and look at what you had, I mean, earlier this season as well, week 2, when you had Jerry Jeudy leaving the Houston Texans game at the very beginning, that stat line, you have 11 targets for Cortland Sutton, 7 receptions, 122 receiving yards. The following week, when Jerry Jeudy's, I mean, questionable for game time, probably shouldn't play, but goes out there anyway because they have no Patrick, have no Hamler. Sutton dominates again with another 10 target performance. Jerry Jeudy goes down the first play this past week, has 11 targets. I mean, Cortland Sutton just dominates the target share when Jerry Jeudy does miss. And if we're going to be looking at the matchup, I mean, what else could you ask for? You're going up against a team that's literally quit. If we're looking at the spread on this game, the Denver Broncos are favored. Yep. How many times this year are we going to see the Denver Broncos favored going forward? Like right now, they have an implied team total of about 22 points. So the offense should be respectable for the first time in a long time. Cortland Sutton's going to have a target share that's through the roof compared to what he usually sees because Jerry Jeudy's going to miss, or at least I'm operating under the assumption that we have no Jerry Jeudy, and I think it's a safe assumption to make. So Cortland Sutton went from, my opinion, someone that you can't even consider to now all of a sudden a smash. I ranked him as almost a wide receiver one this week.
Wow. I have him up to wide receiver 20 for a lot of the same reasons. Raiders dead last in passing EPA. It's just been a really bad situation. And like Mason said, it's the team total that's caught my attention. We had some Broncos games under 18 implied points. Now we're up to 22 points, and you're removing some of the secondary pieces. KJ Hamler's also going to miss. So it's Greg Dulcich, it's Cortland Sutton, and this kind of like trio of running backs that we really can't get too carried away here. So I even have like a decent ranking for Russell Wilson. We have some good quarterbacks on bye, some really weird injury and news as well. So I think even Russell Wilson in a 2-quarterback league for the first time in a long time, we're able to get them in there too.
I'll throw some fuel to that fire. The Raiders defense has either given up 17 fantasy points or a quarterback one scoring performance to every single quarterback they face this year. It goes worse than that. I mean, they're 27th in pressure rate this season. We know Max Crosby's playing really well, but obviously Chandler Jones has yet to show up this season. From an eye test perspective, Mason, every single week when you're watching the Broncos, I mean, this past weekend, it was abysmal. And every 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, 3rd and long situation that they were in, it's like Russ just wanted to heave it and ask one of his wide receivers to make a play. I think some of these downfield targets and yards that we're getting are a bit of prayer yards from Cortland Sutton, but a huge part of that last week was, I think it was the Titans that they played. It was the pressure that he was facing over and over and over again. If he's not facing that pressure, hopefully some, again, those downfield, outside the number, sideline targets turn into actual fantasy points. Because I don't think Cortland Sutton has been bad this year. I think it's the offense, the misidentity, the not knowing what it is. And at the root of that, it's all Russell Wilson's play from this year too.
Did you just admit that you still watch Denver Broncos games?
Yeah, that's your problem, not ours. All right, Josh, I got a name for you.
Yeah.
I want to go to Nick Chubb, kind of slash Amari Cooper, just kind of the Browns superstars here. I thought that their team total was going to be a little bit lower than what it was, but it's fully rebounded now that they're back in Detroit in a dome environment. We have to kind of talk about Amari Cooper. Is this home? Is this away? Shout out to Daigle for that tweet. But for Nick Chubb in particular, the Bills right now aren't the same exact defense. Lots of injuries. Tremaine Edmonds out. Gregory Rousseau out. Tre'Davious White still out. Both of their safeties are banged up as well, and teams facing the Bills have the fourth in neutral pass rate. So that's how you get there with Amari Cooper. But I think just some of the front seven injuries is how Nick Chubb can get home. And I want to also mention just what the Bills are going to be going through. They didn't practice today. They've been in weather hell in Buffalo. There's a chance that they're going to be traveling same day, late night on Saturday. Something weird could happen with their travel plans. And they just came off of a game in overtime. So I think that the Browns are a little bit more well-rested here. I think that matters just a tad for Nick Chubb and Amari Cooper.
There's a reason that we talk about offenses being stickier than defenses, because when we opened the season, we were talking about the Bills, we're talking about the Broncos, but injuries and other schematic changes can alter the success of a defense from start to finish. And look, we love the Bills defense, but as you said, some injuries, some missed contests have turned them into allowing, I think it's what, 471 yards on the ground to running backs over their past three games. And like, when you think of a Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds linebacker group, you shouldn't expect that, but it's because both haven't been out there at the exact same time. So Nick Chubb is the constant of the Browns. And even last week when it wasn't going swimmingly, he still managed, you know, a 33-yard touchdown run. He always has that big play in his back pocket to save the day, kind of like old school Saquon always had too.
Yeah, my last little note there was that Kareem Hunt, even in negative game scripts, has just not been getting as much usage as he was previously. And Nick Chubb right now on pace for a couple more receptions than he usually has. So that's been the difference between Nick Chubb being like a top five fantasy running back and like kind of like that top 10-ish running back that we've had the last couple seasons.
If you're not watching the Broncos offense, Mason, are you watching the Browns offense?
I will tune in a few weeks when we get Watson in here. I mean, we can look at the highlight runs with Nick Chubb. But yeah, going back, if you are talking about Amari Cooper, I know 9 times out of 10, if you're looking at like home away splits, that's just mainly noise. Like, yep, it's a small sample occurrence. Like, you don't need to be looking at it too much. I will say, if you pull up Amari, it's weird. Such an extreme that is a little scary. Like, yeah, we can at least be willing to acknowledge the fact that, I mean, Amari Cooper has like what, 5 touchdowns at home this year. He's averaging closer to like 80 receiving yards at home. This is just off the top of my head. I look at this every day. And then with Amari, he hasn't been startable on the road. So I will at least bring that up, because I know usually that's home noise. But
Mason, is this a home game or is this a road game? What are we calling this? Is this a road game? This is still a road game even at a neutral field.
Yes, I would say it's a road game for both teams. At least that's what I would say.
Okay, so the travel. It's not the noise. It's the travel. Then this is what we have to try to figure out with Amari.
Maybe this is a data point that we get. It's a scientific point. Is it the opposing crowd's noise that plays a factor, or is it the bed situation? Right.
I think it might be.
Or is it the bathroom situation? He doesn't get to stay at home and use his own bathroom. You know, these things.
We'll learn
from that. I have a bunch, actually, two names on the Bills end of this. First, we'll start with Gabriel Davis. We get Gabriel Davis in the dome. Ladies and gentlemen, I was thinking back, we don't really get this Bills offense in a dome that often. We did in week 1 against the Los Angeles Rams, 31-10. Remember the fireworks they came out with, just tossing it left and right and center to Stephon Diggs, Isaiah McKenzie, Gabriel Davis, so on and so forth. We also get that 47-yard touchdown, that leak pattern from Gabriel Davis. He's not a complete player. We've seen that so far this season. It's why his consistency doesn't appear. But in a straight line, he runs fast, and we can create big plays. I mean, Cleveland, when considering this game, over the last 9 contests, they are 7-1-1, leaning towards the over, okay? So even on this neutral field, neither home team, on turf, I think that we can get fireworks out of the Bills offense, a lot to prove here. And the Dolphins slice through them, both on the ground, we'll get to that in a moment, and in the air. And so I bet we get back to the drawing board a little bit with Ken Dorsey playing in the structure of the offense with Josh Allen like we did back in week 1. And I think Gabriel Davis, obviously, along with Stephon Diggs, will be big beneficiaries of that here in week 11.
I saw that Browns cornerback 2, Greg Newsome, had a concussion on Friday's practice. So I think he would have been seeing some Gabe Davis as well.
What are your overall thoughts, Mason, on Gabriel Davis as a player? Because like this is another one of those debates that has been raging on the entire summer, early this season. And on some level, you just look at the production, both sides have been right.
Well, I would say like if you're going back to the summer, if we're looking at late third, early fourth round, Gabe Davis, when he's going next to Jaylen Waddle, like I think at that point it was all projection and it was very difficult to get there. I'll say in a casual redraft league that maybe people are watching this on right now, if you only start two wide receivers and a flex and you're in a full PPR format, I would move Gabriel Davis and Devonta Smith as two very similar prototypes where they're two wide receivers playing alongside alphas that are going to be able to generate a very high target share. They're going to be extremely volatile on a week-to-week basis just because there are going to be points in the offense. So I would say with Gabe Davis, it's almost dependent on the league format that you're playing in, at least in my opinion. Obviously on underdog, he has the ceiling to break the slate any given week. You're very excited about that. But if you're playing in like a casual, shallow redraft format that's a full PPR league, I would say if the target volume's not consistently there, it is very difficult to rely on Gabe Davis. Whereas if you're playing in maybe a dynasty format with multiple flex spots, that volatility is going to be neutralized just a bit over a larger sample. Or if you're playing in a non-PPR format, given the upside that you have with touchdowns or given the upside that you would just have with the big play. So with Gabe Davis, I think it's a very nuanced position where you just have to understand the prototype he is and understand where you maybe want him and where you don't.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those matchups that I do. And against that Browns team last week, for the Dolphins offense, there were a couple big touchdown throws that were there if a certain quarterback in Miami had a touch stronger of an arm down the field. And I think Josh Allen hopefully can hit those. And yeah, to your point, Mason, not to rewind completely here, but in those shallower leagues that aren't on underdog, but are on like Sleeper or Yahoo or ESPN, he's going much later than he was in underdog too. So that's always something to consider. Hayden, I actually want to bring up the running game real quick too, because the Browns suck at defending the run. And I don't know if it was last week because of the UCL or what, but Devin Singletary finally got some like inside the 10, inside the 20 yard carries and scored two touchdowns off of those. I mean, Cleveland is allowing 5.23 yards per carry to backs. They rank 30th in the league in success rate against running backs and 31st in yards allowed before contact. We talked about it a lot that if it's a neutral or negative game script, Devin Singletary so far this season has played around 76% of the snaps. They're favored by what, nine and a half points. So at some point he might get taken out. But what I've seen new wrinkle for this Bills offense is they started to use a sixth offensive lineman. They've brought in Bobby Hart and they've been outstanding with runs on it. They're averaging over 5 yards a carry in those. So while they don't have a get out of jail free card or an easy button right now, as Stephon Diggs is taken away, I think maybe leaning on the running game a little bit more, especially what we saw with the Dolphins and Jeff Wilson crush this Browns front last week, especially defensive tackles. I think the Bills might lean into that a bit more in this week too.
They haven't been getting Nyheim Hines involved. So until that changes, I have Devin Singletary. It's like a boom bust kind of RB2, but the Bills right now, they have the highest team total on the week after going back into the dome environment.
Here we go. All right, Mason, give me another name.
Okay, so I'm going to bring up a name that as soon as you say him, everybody just knows you lose all credibility, right? One of the grossest names you're ever going to see. If you want to be in the cool guys club, you're never allowed to say something positive about a few names, Josh Jacobs, David Montgomery. If you want to be in the cool guys club, you can't talk positively about those guys. But David Montgomery is in a good spot, in my opinion. The issue is going to be when we're getting the high-value touches, where are they coming from? We know Justin Fields will be vulturing those touchdowns at the goal line. That's a little frustrating, as well as there's not much passing volume to go around in Chicago. So maybe the targets, maybe the touchdowns will be a little bit limited compared to what we may find in other offenses. But if we're looking at the percentage of the backfield Montgomery may be able to account for this week, I mean, with Khalil Herbert on the IR, good matchup against the Atlanta Falcons. I feel like it is a very good spot. I know some people are excited about Ebner, but Ebner is a third down, passing down running back. I don't see how his usage takes that much of a sharp uptick if you're looking at the fact that Khalil Herbert, I believe off the top of my head, had 7 receptions so far this season. Maybe that was 7 targets. Let me go ahead and pull that up. It'll take me just 1 second. But Herbert wasn't getting involved as a pass catcher whatsoever. So I would assume that the majority of this volume actually goes in the direction of David Montgomery. If you look at the total touches between Herbert and Montgomery so far this season, the fewest touches that the combo of those two running backs has seen in an individual week, 20. And that's the worst week you've had in Chicago. And yeah, Khalil Herbert actually has only had 6 receptions, 7 targets. So I don't think Ebner's going to take that large of a role. I think everything's going to go to Montgomery. Deontay Foreman had, 31 carries against the Atlanta Falcons a week ago. I mean, right now Vegas has this as a game where I believe the Falcons are 3-point favorites. Yep. So then maybe it's not as good of an environment, but no matchup, every touch.
Mason, this is one of my names as well. And I'm right there with you. I think it's probably the chalk play of the weekend, even though, like you said, it's almost like a backup quarterback situation all season in Chicago, where everyone was just rooting for Khalil Herbert to be the two series to the one series for David Montgomery, even though David Montgomery's done nothing wrong to these people. You know, he's been a really solid player all season long. And Hayden, we talk about every single week on Stats versus Film. I don't think that they're now going to go two David Montgomery series to one Tristan Ebner series. Like, that drop down to the talent from Herbert to Ebner is probably drastic. And what we're also getting is this team is just scoring on so many more of their drives this season. I mean, Chicago has scored on 22 of 42 of their drives over the past 4 weeks, when prior to that, I think they were about 28th or 27th in the league. And a huge difference could be for David Montgomery inside of the 10-yard line in this game. Because when you look at it, Justin Fields this season has 8 carries inside the 10. Khalil Herbert had 6. And David Montgomery only had 2. You know, on his own team, he was 3rd in the pecking order on carries inside of the 10, inside the 5-yard line. So that is an area that can equal fantasy points if we get those opportunities. And David Montgomery should see the biggest boost out of everyone if that's the case.
Yeah, I have David Montgomery as my RB15. Somebody in the same tier, same game. I'm going back to Cordarrelle Patterson, and this one's a little bit riskier than David Montgomery, just because last week the usage was so out of control. But it's really hard to bet against this Falcons offense that's really high up. Now they're 4th in implied points this week. Last week, when CPAT was kind of messing around in like a four running back rotation, that was off a short rest. Obviously, CPAT's a little bit older, previously had the injuries. So I'm kind of betting against that and hoping that some of the rest comes into play for CPAT. But the Chicago Bears recently have not been very good against the run. And I think that's probably because Roquan Smith's out of there, one of their best edge rushers as well. And then teams playing against the Chicago Bears this season, 4th highest neutral run rate. And that's led to being 29th against fantasy running backs. So I'm just going to be betting on CPAT, not playing 60-70% of the snaps, but even get 50% of the snaps in this offense, coming off a week where they had their lowest neutral pass rate of the week. I still think in a committee, he can see 15 to 20 super valuable touches here. I think that he would be the primary goal line back as well.
I want to see more CPAT.
I was meaning to ask about Cordarrelle Patterson, because I've been stuck on this all week. Like, for every reason you said, the implied team total's there, the matchup's there, it's phenomenal. And who the hell is going to score points in Atlanta if it's not Cordarrelle Patterson?
Right.
But, I mean, and keep in mind, Cordarrelle Patterson, my 3rd most drafted running back on Underdog this year behind Jacobs and Walker. So I want Cordarrelle Patterson to come out here and crush it. But the man did have 24 snaps out of 63 a week ago. So I'm just a little
hesitant. I think the rest thing is going to be the difference, is not playing Thursday night football and your second game back from injury. And I just think that there's a chance that they're home favorites here, that he just has a higher chunk of the workload. So it's a risky play. I think he's like compared to David Montgomery, like same tier of running back, but David Montgomery I feel very good about. Cordarrelle Patterson, I think, could easily outproduce David Montgomery, but the floor, like you said, is much lower because David Montgomery's played 75% of the snaps. CPAT's going to play 20, but like on Underdog, like battle royales and stuff, I think both of these running backs are like the perfect second running back in battle royale. David Montgomery also gets some leverage off of Justin Fields, which is nice. But I think CPAT has plenty enough ceiling here, just because the Bears are tanking on defense.
An interesting point you made at the start of that, Mason, because we went through Hayden's rankings yesterday and he has Marcus Mariota as a top 10 quarterback this week. And then we always ask, like, if that's the case, if the team total is so high because they're going against the Bears defense, which totally sucks, and they're tanking on that side of the ball, who is going to be scoring these points? Cause like, you can't rely on Drake London. You can't rely on Kyle Pitts. Which of these running backs is going to do it? Is it even predictable? If so, and I think the easiest one to probably predict is Cordarrelle Patterson in a weird and twisted way, despite exactly what you said, the question of being the workload, because we want it to be wholly different than it was last week. So
I know we're getting a little off track, but are y'all throwing Pitts into any battle royale drafts this week?
I will. I mean, you can't find this upside, folks. I'm telling you.
Speaking of, if you have never played Battle Royale on Underdog, I know Mason loves it. I know we all love it. It is such a better game, I think, than DFS out there, because there's no like cheat sheets out there for it. There's no, you know, the same chalk every single week out there for it. It's not 1v1s or 2v2s. Instead of using $15 on DFS, draft three times over in the Battle Royale on Underdog. Use promo code FLOCK if you want to. Use promo code the show if you want to. Whatever way you want to play the Battle Royales, you can do it.
I just did a draft. Joe Burrow stacked with T. Higgins. I have Mark Andrews, who I think is going a little bit too low, with Steph Diggs in the dome environment, Josh Jacobs, and then Mason's guy, David Montgomery.
So no, Mason's guy is Josh Jacobs. I mean, loves drafting Josh Jacobs more than Mason this summer.
Okay, don't put that on me. It's not that I love
He was your highest drafted running back this summer.
Everyone else hated him.
It's that if you wanted to be in the cool guy circle, if you wanted to look like you knew what you were doing, you were not allowed to take him. So I'm sitting there in high stakes drafts getting Josh Jacobs, a starting running back in an offense I thought was going to be a little better with Adams. Clearly, I was wrong. In the eighth round, I thought he was the same thing as Najee Harris. We made videos on it. We're saying, if you're going to draft Najee Harris in the first, why are you not taking Josh Jacobs in the eighth? So it's not that I'm some massive Josh Jacobs fanboy. Wow. It's that everybody thought if you want to be cool this year, you're not allowed to draft Josh Jacobs no matter how far he falls. And I was willing to
I always thought that if you pan that camera a little bit over to your right, you get a Josh Jacobs frame jersey on the other wall. But
well, it's above my bed, actually. Not in this room. It's above my
ceiling?
Bed. The jersey's above my bed on the ceiling. It's a portrait of Josh Jacobs, right, like oil painted, really nice. It's very tasteful, very tasteful.
Of course. Well, I know Josh Jacobs isn't on your list here. What is the next name of quote unquote our guys of week 11?
So the next name, I know we didn't actually prep this, but I'm not looking at the list right now. So, I mean, maybe we can make a bit of an audible
T.
here.
Higgins, if you want to throw in T. Higgins here.
Okay, yeah, we can go T. Higgins. With T. Yep. Higgins, I mean, just from a casual redraft perspective, I felt like a lot of people are going through and not understanding that you're just going to see some natural volatility with T. Higgins. I know that over the past few weeks, it's been a little painful. I mean, 3 weeks ago, you had Ja'Marr Chase, his first game out on primetime. The Bengals looked horrible, but that's just occasionally going to happen. I mean, it is what it is. Then the week after, you have 5 touchdowns for Joe Mixon. Then we have a bye. I still want to project T. Higgins as a top 10 wide receiver any given week that you have no Ja'Marr Chase here. I mean, I think that it's going to be a positive game environment. It's a tougher defense going up against Pittsburgh. I think right now the spread's about 4.5 points on this game, but still the Bengals are going to be able to effectively move the ball down the field. I think that you should naturally get 25% of the team's targets going over to T. Higgins, and it's a safe, and I would be confident with that projection because we know that the concentration of targets here is extreme where they're not really using a wide receiver 4. They're not really using a wide receiver 5. So with T. Higgins, I know everybody's planning on playing him, but I think a lot of people are viewing him as that like mid to high end wide receiver 2. And I think he's a bona fide stud alpha wide receiver 1 this week.
So I have Tyler Boyd, and it's along these same conversation lines. And I'm happy to move mine over to T. Higgins if you want to. But I think both have a chance of going into this. And look, if we, you know, rewind back to week 1, opening week versus these same Steelers, Joe Burrow had 4 interceptions with that pick 6 on the opening play, threw it 53 times in that game. But we know the Bengals offense has totally changed since then. You know, back then, it was trying to learn how to beat cover 2. It was deep dropbacks off of play action, turn your head to the defense, whip it around, and try to find these holes and gaps in the defense. Now it's solely shotgun, eyes on the defense every single time. And like you're saying, the volatility of T. Higgins, I understand it's been like that production-wise for Tyler Boyd when you went like 8 catches, 155 yards against the Atlanta Falcons. Then there was like that Browns defensive disaster that dominated the Bengals. And then you had the ground dominant games against the Carolina Panthers where the backups got in for the Bengals in the fourth quarter. But, you know, zoom out, 2 of those 3 games were fantastic offensive successes for the Bengals. And I just think that this passing offense, not being underrated heading into this, but I'm with you, Mason. One of these guys in T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd, I think is going to finish this week as a top 8 wide receiver if this 4-point spread is going to hit in the Bengals' favor.
They better, because I have both of them inside my top 10. This is a very tough week for fantasy rankings. I'm just going very bullish on Tyler Boyd just because Bengals 2nd in neutral pass rate over the last month. The Steelers are 2nd to last in defending fantasy wide receivers. Akilah Witherspoon is on the injury report, probably not going to play. Minkah Fitzpatrick's questionable coming off of that appendicitis. So obviously TJ Watt scares me to death here, but I do think the Bengals are going to pass a ton in this matchup. So I'm very bullish on both of them.
This pick'em projection of 54.5 receiving yards for Tyler Boyd is the higher. It might be one of my favorite ones early in the week. We'll revisit those on Sunday morning. All right, Hayden, give us a name.
Let's go to Devonta Smith. I'm viewing him as a legit boom bust wide receiver too. Obviously, we all think he's very good. The targets hasn't necessarily been there, but that's because Dallas Goedert's really good in his own right, was leading the position in EPA per target. You remove him, I don't think that the backup tight ends are going to be earning as many targets. They're going to mix in a third wide receiver, but that wide receiver's typically been in there to kind of run blocks. So I think cutting this target share from three primary down to two, I think it's really going to help Devonta Smith in particular. His ADOT is a little bit closer to Dallas Goedert's. Dallas was at like 5.2. Devonta Smith's at 7.9. AJ Brown's been all the way up to 11.2. So if just on that part of the field, I think that you could see Devonta Smith win. And his matchup is just slightly easier than AJ Brown's this week just because of the Colts. So we know the team total's high. And I just think that this is a good week to be betting on talent here. And it's been really difficult for me to like do the math to get there with Devonta Smith. And that's why I've always kind of been 1 foot in, 1 foot out. But I think this is a time to get 2 feet in and let Devonta Smith kind of win as a legit wide receiver too.
Mason, where are you at with the Philadelphia Eagles off their first loss of the season against the Indianapolis Jeff Saturdays?
I'm not worried whatsoever. I mean, I'm right there. Smith was on my list just because I kind of view him similar to Gabriel Davis, like I said earlier. But the difference is now that we removed Dallas Goedert, I think that there are a ton of targets that are going to be available in Philadelphia. Maybe the offense takes a small hit. I'm still not too worried. And going back to what we were just talking about with Cincinnati, Philadelphia is another one of those teams that you don't have to worry about the wide receiver four, wide receiver five siphoning off too much. Now, yeah, we did have a couple of these guys this past week doing it, but if we take a step back, that seems to be an outlier compared to what we're used to with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think Smith, great offense, respectable matchup, and I mean, he's going to get a larger percentage of the pie now that we have no Goddard.
My only question is how this team has to change and alter their game plan a little bit without Dallas Goedert, because like they had answers for everything. I know it didn't work against Washington, but and it kind of did actually, but it didn't win loss record. It did. But those screens to Dallas Goedert have been like such a mainstay and how he's winning after the catch. Like, I wonder what they pivot to in those situations. I wouldn't be shocked if it's tunnel screens. You know, we've seen a bunch of tunnel screens to these wide receivers, either AJ Brown and definitely Devonta Smith this season. So maybe a couple more manufactured touches to Devonta because you don't have someone like Dallas Goedert to be the easy button as often.
My other note is the defense hasn't been playing well. And I think if there's a couple games in a row where the Eagles were just dominating teams and they weren't even passing the ball in the fourth quarter. If the Eagles are like worse now, like moving forward, I think they actually like just play up to more passing volume in general. And quietly, this thing keeps going back and forth, but the Eagles neutral pass rate over the last month of the season is back up to fourth overall. They started out hot. They went down. Now they're back to passing more a little bit in neutral situations. Obviously we don't expect that to hold as much with Dallas Goedert out, but I just think that if the Eagles are slightly worse and they're not blowing teams out, I think that's actually going to help Devonta Smith.
No Shaq Leonard either for the Colts, injured reserve for the rest of the season. Mason, I think you have one or two more names. I think one more name. Give it to us.
Yeah, we'll go over to Tyler Higbee here. I know with Higbee, not a super exciting option, but I mean, we've had the track record before. You saw him be, I mean, the tight end won for a small stretch at the end of 2019. I know we're going way back, but I mean, so far this season, the man has had, I mean, a decent amount of volume here. If we're going through and looking at the most targeted tight ends in the NFL, of course, on a per game standpoint, you got Travis Kelce at one, not going to surprise anybody. Got Mark Andrews at two, of course. Then at three, we have Tyler Higbee sitting here.
Yep.
I know it's a horrendous offensive environment right now. If you're looking at implied team totals, the Rams are down there only ahead of the Jets and Panthers in projected points scored this week, which is laughable, of course. But I'm not a believer in Allen Robinson. I mean, if you look at the yards per route run with A-Rob last year, he was clearly washed. This season, I think nothing's changed. I don't really think A-Rob all of a sudden is an exciting option with no Cooper Kupp. I think, hell, maybe Tyler Higbee is just a safe option at the tight end position to consistently see 7, 8, 9 targets. He's been averaging 7.5, and now we have no Cooper Kupp. I can go to 8. And at the tight end position, how many guys are going to be able to get you more than 5?
Yeah, I think that goes to that point, right, Hayden, where at the tight end position where it is right now, like getting 7 targets and seeing if a guy can get 42 yards, not a touchdown, because that's, you know, Tyler Higbee doesn't score those.
Oh, my God.
it's so bad. But that's where we're at here. Talking about the differences in the Eagles without Dallas Goedert, there might not be a bigger difference for a team than the Rams not having Cooper Kupp and just everything that they were able to do front side without him. Now, so many of those concepts were Cooper Kupp a little deeper, Tyler Higbee a little shallower, and that was the front side read for Matthew Stafford, which he was living off of this season because the offensive line was allowing him to get backside. How do they pivot? they were asked about it this week and they were saying, well, basically we're going to rotate three people into this spot and see. I don't know. I don't think Tyler Higbee's role is going to change at all. So I bet we see hopefully similar volume to what we saw earlier in the year, like Mason is saying.
Stafford's back. The one thing to keep an eye out for, Tyler Higbee's was a full-time player the last couple weeks. He hasn't been running as many routes. I got on a percentage of the team dropbacks, but like you said, like they've given up. I've seen Tyler Higbee get a bunch of screens, and like,
yeah,
who else are the screens gonna go to? So yeah. I have him as like a fringe tight end one, not super sexy, but none of these tight end names are very sexy.
Literally the lowest A dot in the league this year at 3.1.
Wow.
So. What do y'all think about the Rams being 3-point dogs here with Stafford back against Dalton?
It's gross, but the offensive line's so bad. But the Saints' offensive line is also really bad.
It is. They're missing three starters as well.
Don't watch this game, please.
None of us are going to pick it for Sunday. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
I have one more name. Hayden has one. Oh, you've got two?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we have the same one here, and that's Kadarius Toney.
All right.
So let's talk about it. After Kadarius Toney caught 4 or 5 targets for 57 yards and a score, had some manufactured touches, I think it's going to be different this week. Why? Because the whole week is likely focused on getting him involved because they've known all week long that Juju Smith-Schuster is not playing in this contest, that Mecole Hardman is going to miss and miss 3 games after this one as well. So here's your options. Is it Justin Watson, who's an NFL journeyman who made a couple splash plays down the field this year? Maybe. Or is it Sky Moore, who has been on the roster this entire season and has barely earned any playing time because of it? Or is it Kadarius Toney, who is the most slippery wide receiver on the roster, their best chance of beating man coverage, something that they are seeing more and more often this season because defenses understand that their wide receivers cannot beat man coverage? I think that while he won't have an entire grasp of the playbook, at least getting him involved, and it can be as an outside wide receiver, it can be as an inside wide receiver, anywhere you want to. A huge focus of this game in order for them to, you know, win, snatch victory, is to see Kadarius Toney see 7, 8, 9, 10 opportunities. And we know he can do wonders with it.
The Chiefs, obviously, first in neutral pass rate. They are tied for first in implied points this week. Like you said, this is the first week where they're going to be relying on him to be out there. Whether he's going to be in 2 wide receiver sets, I'm not sure about that. But when he's out there in 3 wide receiver sets, he's going to be the schemed up guy. And I don't think he's just a schemed up player. We saw some evidence of that even last week. But also just in those like 2 or 3 starts with the Giants where he looked absolutely dominant, not just like running bubble screens, but actually winning against man coverage here. So the matchup is totally rock solid. The Chargers defense hasn't been all that great. And I'll even mention that like the Chargers defense, like at linebacker, so bad. And I think that even Kadarius Toney could take advantage of some of that on some of these schemed up looks as well. So I'm treating him as a boom bust wide receiver 2-3. I have him inside my top 25. Let's ride.
Mason, I need your thoughts.
I mean, it's really nice that you have both Hardman and Juju ruled out, because I thought we were going to be in a situation where they were game time decisions rolling into Sunday night and you were going to have no idea. So I think now that we have the clarity that those guys are out, Tony's a fine play. I was a little bit worried about the situation.
Just a fine play? Where's the enthusiasm, Mason, for one of the most electric players in football?
I mean, it is exciting. If you look at a yards per route run standpoint last year, obviously the man was incredibly efficient, but I don't know. I feel like
I sense hesitation. I can grab it through the screen right now.
Like the thing is, what happens with Courtland Sutton? I mean, not when Courtland Sutton, when Travis Kelce comes out and has 14 targets this week.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there's room for more than that, though. Like I think that they're gonna pass the ball so much. And I think
they might just give up the run.
That's why I view him as an extension of the run now, game to some extent here.
Now, to that point, though, Hayden, the Chargers do invite teams to run. So, like, if there was ever a game to lean into.
The Chiefs don't give a shit.
I know. Yeah. And also, I would say this passing offense has struggled against Brandon Staley-esque defenses. Yeah. But that was previously when they were a much more vertical team. And now they've been built to win inside the 20s, you know, not down the field.
we also know the Chargers, like especially the Chargers against the Chiefs, are going to sit there in two high shell coverages. Correct. They could even drop eight. We've seen the Chargers kind of experiment with that from time to time. And if we're seeing those type of defensive coverages, you're going to see little check downs to Kadarius Toney, and those check downs could turn into first downs because he's so damn good at the game.
Right. Or early separation and let him slip after the catch.
I mean, for me, it's I couldn't talk about him all offseason and Correct. Then tell people on the podcast, do not drop him. Do not drop him. For me to not get super bullish in the game that he's starting with Patrick Mahomes, I have no choice. So I'm going to be riding this thing.
All right. Last name, Hayden. A man who every year around Thanksgiving time goes in the injury report with an illness. It happened today with Lamar Jackson missing practice, but he will start on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, we need to get him some Flintstone vitamins, but I really love, just in particular for Battle Royale, stacking Mark Andrews with Lamar Jackson. Typically, it's been very difficult to do, but both of their ADPs are a little bit lower just because of the injury report. Mark Andrews has been limited all week. It seems like he's going to play. He's been doing interviews and stuff kind of as normal. I think he's going to play. Lamar Jackson, they already said he's going to start. We don't know if it's just another trip to the bathroom today. Whatever it is, Lamar Jackson, it hasn't been pretty for a big chunk of the season, but we've seen the upside play. The team total right now sitting at a very healthy 27 points. That's the third highest on the week. And just getting Mark Andrews back to me is like kind of all he needs, him and Isaiah Likely, with the super efficient ground game. The pass blocking has been awesome recently. PFF, their top four team pass blocking grades have come in the last 5 weeks. They're kind of hitting their peak, but we haven't seen it in a little bit yet, like as a narrative, just because of the bye week and some of the injuries. I would take advantage, get ahead of this thing, get some Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews stacks in DFS before their prices kind of rebound.
Pretty simple. I mean, they're the largest favorites on the slate, 13. It's at home. Let's roll. It is different, though. I mean, I get from what you're saying because, again, he has not finished higher than quarterback 9 since week 3. And we talked about it in yesterday's show. In the opening 3 weeks of the season, Rashad Bateman was making plays down the field, and there is no one that is now making plays down the field consistently for this team. So I do think an evolution is starting to happen here. Maybe, you know, after from here on out is when we see peak performance Lamar Jackson again. It's just a more difficult situation, I would say, now from a pass catcher standpoint, maybe easier from running back standpoint, but an offensive line standpoint, but more difficult from a pass catcher standpoint now than it was earlier this season.
Panthers also have been dealing with some injuries, Jeremy Chinn and Dante Jackson, two up and coming players on injured reserve. And their pass rush has some names, but 28th in adjusted sack rate. So this could be a like backup corners versus backup type of wide receivers here. And then just betting on Lamar Jackson. So to me, Battle Royale, promo code the show, promo code Flock, match your deposit up to $100. Get into the Battle Royale streets, especially like get some prep in because we got Thanksgiving slate. You know,
we do. I know Mason's had his own games out there that his community gets to go and play. We'll have our own one on Thanksgiving. Hopefully everyone will check that out as well. Mason, any last words? I know you got to run, prep for your streams, all that good stuff.
I don't think so. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for putting the best content out here. And y'all are crushing it.
Mason, so are you. I know, I'm sure all of you who watch this are already checking out Mason's channel. Literally, the dude streams every single day. It's like 152 straight days he has streamed. It's insane stuff. So go into his community, check it out. It's great work. And he breaks groupthink, which I love.
I want to hit on one last thing, like off of that. People always like DM us like, hey, I want to break through the industry. What do I need to do? Open up a YouTube account, get on there and stream every single day consistently. Have some good taste, be pretty funny, and then people will start coming. That's what Mason's been doing, absolutely crushing it on the YouTube street. So if you're trying to make it in the industry, follow what Mason's doing, go watch his content. Learn some things about it. It's the best way to be an individual and create a very big niche for yourself. So shout out to Mason.
There you go. Wow.
Well, wow. Thank you. I'll say nobody likes fantasy football as much as I do. There are a lot of people way better at it than I am, but nobody likes it as much as I do.
There we go. All right. We'll get out of here. Thanks for tuning in. Check out the other shows. We just posted an entire 40-minute episode of Scheme on the Dolphins offense. It was beautiful with Josh McCown. Look into it. Up the villa. We'll talk to y'all soon. See ya.